This is Ed McMahon. It's That's Life with Mark Snyder. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You were on probably about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
On That's Life with Mark Snyder. And welcome back to PNP Network. How are you?
I'm good.
In the middle of a big promotional tour for the new book?
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of varying stuff on it, from radio and television.
Yeah. What was it like to be an author now?
Oh, it was great. I haven't heard how well the book is doing or anything like that, but I'm very proud of the book.
I'm sure it'll do fine. You know, you've been successful at pretty much everything you've done, so I assume that this will follow suit, right?
Yeah, I hope so. It's a bestseller in Canada, so I guess from this point, no matter how badly, it couldn't be too bad. So.
No, I think it'll do fine, and I wouldn't even worry about it, actually. Sales will be good because you've built up quite a name in wrestling. Everybody, when we talk wrestling, Bret the Hitman Hart is one of the first names mentioned. I want to know a little bit about your background. Now, we've talked about this in the past, but obviously people listening right now may not have heard the original interview. I know you're from Canada, and you have a large wrestling family. Was your father involved in wrestling as well?
Yeah, my father pretty much was one of the major forces in wrestling, I think, for years and years. You know, he started out wrestlers that are old.
What was your dad's name?
My dad's name is Stu Hart.
Okay.
And he'll be 85 this upcoming May 3rd.
Wow, so he has actually seen the great success that you've had, which must make him quite proud.
Yeah, I think, he's been very proud of what I've accomplished in wrestling.
Now, when he started in wrestling, obviously, was he just doing Canadian promotions, or was it worldwide?
He started in New York City right after the World War II. He met my mother in New York and was wrestling in New York, and started basically all over the country at that time.
Huh. So how did he end up in Canada then?
Well, he lived up here. He made... saved up enough money back in those days, I think it was his life savings, to come up here and buy out the promoter who ran the wrestling up here in Western Canada, and basically got right into the business, started about 1951, I think. He's been running wrestling, actually probably even a little earlier, 1948, I think.
Hmm.
He started it, and then he sort of concluded it by 1951. He kind of own the rights to Western Canada from Vancouver to Winnipeg, kind of thing.
So you're actually still living in Canada yourself?
Yeah, I'm in Calgary right now.
Wow.
Looking at a huge snowstorm, as a matter of fact.
Well, I'm glad I'm not there then. Yeah. We came close enough in Boston to one a little while ago, so I have no interest in seeing any more snow this year, Brett. I want to talk to a little bit about, I assume when you were young that you and your brothers and stuff all would wrestle in the house. Didn't you have something in your garage for that?
In the basement.
The basement.
Referred to as the dungeon.
Ah.
A lot of people might have seen the A&E documentary where it kind of highlighted my father's, his love for, her passion for submission wrestling.
So you guys were submitting on a regular basis, huh?
Yeah, really the logic that my dad had, and I think it carried through from those times in the 40s and the 50s and whatnot, when you wanted to get into wrestling, you kind of had to start somewhere, and Calgary was the place where a lot of guys started. And the best way to start, you know, like people that were good prospects in those days would tell you to come up to Calgary to start and come see Stu Hart kind of thing. And what it really was if you could get past my dad down in the basement or at least earn his respect, he would teach you professional wrestling. But he would make you appreciate very much the fine art of submission wrestling beforehand. And that was his biggest passion. My dad's always loved wrestling, I think, of all kinds, from Olympic wrestling, amateur wrestling. His dream was to go to the Olympics, but the war had come. And, he just has this thing about wrestling. I think you could wake him up, even now, you could wake him up at 3 or 4 in the morning and tell him you have a couple of guys downstairs that want to become pro wrestlers. He couldn't get his shoes on fast enough. So.
Does he still have some of his old moves?
Oh, yeah. You know, old wrestlers, you know, they never forget. You know, he knows every move and knows exactly just what degree to put it on, you know.
When you were growing up, were you into any other sports besides wrestling?
Yeah, I was really, really heavy into football. I loved football, and I often wonder if I'd zigs and zagged some different ways that I might have ended up as a football player. But
what position did you always play?
I was a defensive end.
Hmm.
I loved the football that I played, but I was also a provincial wrestling champion up here for quite a few years, and was actually kind of groomed to get into, you know, to go to the Commonwealth Games and different things from an amateur wrestling standpoint, but I didn't see a lot of rewards in amateur wrestling other than personal ones, and which is fine, but I wanted to have some money in my bank accounts one of these days, and pro wrestling, which is nothing close to amateur wrestling, but at the same time, I was young, and I was fit and pretty strong and pretty good sized, and wrestling offered me a chance to see the world a little bit and make not a lot of money, at least not in those days, but I'd make enough to pay for a trip to go to New Zealand, for example. Or, or I went to a lot of exotic places for a young man, and I, you know, still appreciate all the what wrestling opened for me has been pretty priceless, I think, over the years.
That's interesting. Can you remember back to your first actual professional wrestling bout?
Yeah, pretty much.
Were you a sacrificial lamb in that fight? Or?
Yeah, for big time.
That's what usually you start off as.
What's that?
That's what you usually start off as.
Yeah, I somebody got hurt, and it was in a smaller town, and I accepted, you know, that it would be, you know, I could take somebody's place kind of thing, and didn't need to worry too much about being embarrassed. I went in with the two Japanese wrestlers, as I mentioned in my book, that had trained me, and I was wrestling them. I thought, well, that'll be okay, because they'll take pretty good care of me, because I'm their, you know, their student kind of thing. Well, they beat the hell out of me. Really worked me over much worse than I imagined, maybe worse than anyone else would have at the time, and I remember they explained to me after that it had to be that way, and it was all part of paying your dues kind of thing. But, and I think it was. Wrestling was a little different then than it is now. There was a little more respect for what needed to be done, and you know, the realism that was in wrestling in those days.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because there's two things I want to talk about. One of them is the fact that you mentioned that you were a pretty good-sized kid. Well, nowadays, they're bringing these gargantuan size people into the leagues, you know, for effect. There's some really big guys in there. But the other thing that I think that really is the negative part of this, and that is the Vince McMahon and Ted Turner and all these people involved in this, getting away from actual wrestling and more into just complete showbiz with characters and plots and really getting away from a lot of the wrestling with kids. Even when years ago when I was watching wrestling, we'd still learn some actual legitimate moves instead of learning pile drivers and things that the kids out in the playground are trying to do on each other.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of wrestlers today know a wristwatch from a wrist lock that are wrestling. They don't know any of the holds, and they don't even know what they're for. They don't understand the rhythm or the psychology of a great wrestling match the way they did a few years ago. I agree. I miss wrestling for what it used to be. I don't think it has a lot of great moral values to it anymore, and maybe some people think it never did, but I kind of disagree. I thought that, you know, even in the Hulk Hogan heyday, or even my own, when my career was at its best, you know, I think I represented, you know, like when your kids turned on the TV on a Saturday afternoon and they're watching wrestling and it was my character standing there talking about the big match. I actually think in a lot of ways that was probably pretty wholesome, and your kids were safe watching me and Hulk Hogan and the wrestlers that, you know, what wrestling was sort of was something that was actually just a, wrestling's basically a morality play.
Mm-hmm. Good versus evil.
Yeah, and it was, I think it was great. Your grandfather and your grandson and the whole family could watch wrestling in those days, and what it is now is something that appeals kind of to a goon mentality of 16 to 25 male audience.
Exactly. You had to have naked women running around.
Yeah, I don't think they even care about the actual wrestling. As long as two wrestlers are hitting each other over the head with chairs or something,
yeah,
they can make a face in front of the camera, everyone's happy. But I kind of see it as a big giant sellout myself.
You mentioned Hulk Hogan, and you know, I'm one of those people who grew up with Hulk Hogan. In terms of the positive things he was talking about, taking your vitamins, drinking your milk, all that, and then they turned him into a bad guy. And a lot of the kids that grew up, you know, especially the younger ones around him, they didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, well, sometimes in wrestling, and I found myself in a similar circumstance, you know, not long after Hulk Hogan, and I tried to do my best in sort of covering myself. But it's like Rocky a little bit, where you become a character in wrestling, and it's like Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 and Rocky 3, and you're knocking out Mr. T, and you're knocking out a big Russian, and after a while you're knocking everybody off, that after enough years of it, people get really tired of it.
Mm.
And you find yourself really, whether you like it or not, evolving into a bad guy, and that's, sometimes you have no control over that. It's just that people get tired of watching the same thing. So that's where you get a lot of the character changes, and I think Hulk Hogan milked it about as far as he could go and had no choice, and I think I had the same situation. I wanted to stay a hero in wrestling, but it was becoming more and more apparent, especially with the direction that wrestling was going. I had to find a kind of a different ground, some other plateau to stay on. So I found myself an American basher, and kind of rode that wave. But you know, I never had any serious bad feelings for Americans at all. And I find today on how I left the WWF in particular, a lot of people still relate that to me. And it just sort of goes to show you again that wrestling becomes far more real than people think. And
absolutely.
And because I was an American basher on a wrestling television show, a lot of people assume that to be the truth.
You know, you mentioned Hulk and you know, people like Roddy Piper who've gone into to the acting genre. Have you ever tried acting at all? Besides,
yeah, I did 2 seasons with Lonesome Dove, the Western television show that was shot up here in Calgary.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much.
That's something.
If it hadn't been canceled in its third season, I would have been in a starring role as the sheriff. And
is that something you'd like to go into, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. And I look at the people that were working with me on the show, from, you know, Eric McCormick and Scott Bairstow, and just a lot of the cast have found themselves on different shows all over the place. And I thought I carried my end pretty well. I didn't embarrass myself or anyone else on the cast or show. And, you know, I think that's probably my best option once I, you know, completely wash my hands of wrestling.
We had Scott on the show recently who said some nice things about you, as a matter of fact. And we were talking to him because of his role on Party of Five as that Nev Campbell beater.
Yeah.
Very interesting role that he had there. The book that Bret has written is called Bret Hart, Best There Is, Best There Was, Best There Will Be. A very shy and subtle title, just like your career.
Well, you know, people don't appreciate my modesty there. But, you know, I really do believe that I was the best there is, and the best there was, and the best there ever will be. And, one simple way to explain it, I suppose, it would be my safety record. I wrestled for 22 years, and, you know, I saw all these wrestlers a few weeks ago on Larry Kane talking about how they'd hurt each other for years and hit each over the head. It's like it's kind of like real-life Three Stooges. And, I've wrestled 22 years. I've never hurt one single wrestler anywhere that ever got up the next day and couldn't get up and go and do his job and wrestle again the next night. That's probably the safest and most careful. And
how many world champions did you garner before you...
Well, I won the WWF title 5 times, and I won the WCW title twice, in very different other titles. It's got to be around 15 different title reigns of varied kinds.
And now you're going to win a title with Started Publishing for selling a lot of books, hopefully.
Well, I sure hope so. I think this is a great book, and it's a great chance for anybody that was a fan of mine or is a fan of mine to review some of my great matches and look back on my you know, reflect on my life and how I got into wrestling. And it's been an interesting story and an interesting tale, and I think, you know, there's an introduction by Roddy Piper that's just, you know, quite amusing, to say the least. And I think there's a, for me personally, there's a part at the back of the book where I talk about my brother Owen that I think most people will find pretty impressive.
Yeah, we talked about some of the crazy stunts and things that wrestling has done, and one of them unfortunately resulted in the death of your brother.
Yeah, that's where, you know, it's just such a shame. It was so unnecessary, and, you know, I think, you know, it's not something that I will get over, and I don't know that it's anything that the wrestling business will ever get over.
Hmm. And it's interesting the way they were actually pitting you guys against each other on the wrestling, brother against brother. Obviously, it wasn't the true thing, but it was interesting for the fans to watch.
Yeah, it was... as I look back on it now, it were some of my more special moments now in the ring. I, you know, whenever I sort of get a desire to sort of reminisce about my brother Owen, I'll put in some old matches of his and of mine. And, you know, we had really intense matches, but in a very professional way. Like, we were very careful, and it was actually very fun for him and I to work with. We'll show each other, and I think I brought out a lot of the best in him that way, and he loved being the sort of bad, rotten, spoiled brother kind of thing.
Well, if you buy Brett's book, you can kind of reminisce yourselves, folks out there, about Owen Hart. It's an interesting story, that your life story, and a very sad, tragic twist there at the end there.
Yeah.
On your brother, unfortunately. Do you have any children?
Yes, I have 4 kids.
Any boys?
I have 2 boys.
And either one of them taking up wrestling?
No, not at all. My one son, my youngest son, was quite caught up in wrestling. But ever since I left the WWF, his passion for wrestling has waned somewhat. He's a big hockey fan.
Hmm. He's Canadian. He's supposed to be a hockey fan, right?
Well, the Canadians can be wrestling fans too, but he stopped watching it. It didn't appeal to him, and it wasn't so much a case of me forcing that. Even though I'm glad to say that none of my kids watch wrestling today the way it is.
But in a way, it's kind of sad that that Stu's legacy of wrestling champions is going to end.
Well, hopefully I'm sure it's a big family.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them that still all they do is think about wrestling.
Hey, and Brett,
maybe
you know,
be a champion for a hockey player or hockey team than a wrestling team.
Brett, I'm just thinking Vince McMahon just might invent one of the hearts. You know, he could do that too. He's capable of that.
Yeah, no, he is capable of that.
Yeah. Well, Brett, the book is called, I'm sure you know what the name of it is, it's Bret Hart's Best There Will Be from Started Publishing. And I know we have limited time, so I want to say thank you again for coming on again, and I can't wait till the next time, Brett.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.